Welcome to this special Dialogue on Disability edition of Musicians of Rochester. I'm Julia Figueres. You are listening to double bassist Galen McCormick. She's well known in our community as a former member of Gibbs in Maine, as a teacher, and as part of the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra's bass section. But these days, you will no longer see her on stage at Kodak Hall with your Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. As part of Dialogue on Disability, the station-wide initiative at WXXI, Galen comes in to join me today and talk about her journey. Galen, thank you so much for stepping in and having a chat with me. You just posted a video on your Facebook page called Rounding the Corner to 2018. A few weeks back, you posted something a little startling on your Facebook page. If you want to share that with us.
Well, sure. Thanks for having me, Julia. It's really nice to be with you today. I wrote this on Facebook at the encouragement of a coach of mine who said, you know, you have to stop hiding who you are to everybody, because to some people, they knew I had this disability and other people just kind of thought I was sick. So what I wrote on Facebook was, I've been deaf now for almost 1 year and grappling with what that means to be deaf and a musician. This is why you have not seen me play with RPO. And likely my professional performing days are over. Maybe. Jury's still out on that one. But look at me living, despite it all, and teaching and creating and writing new music for students. The next chapter is starting to get written in my own life. Love you all.
So tell us what happened.
Well, it played out over a long time. I have bilateral Meniere's disease, which is a fancy long medical name. Bilateral meaning I have in both of my ears the same disease, which is called Meniere's disease. And that's what I like to say, it's a bucket for if you have these symptoms that go this way, you will likely have this course of progression. So the symptoms I have are that I get vertigo often without any warning. And I have fluctuating hearing loss. And so the progression that a lot of us with Meniere's will have is that you'll get vertigo, and after this attack that can last anywhere from an hour to 4 days for me, my hearing will drop, and it might come back to some level or it might not. And this happened about 12 years ago in my left ear, and I just kept on playing, and I actually didn't tell anybody that I had lost my hearing. I know the RPO members knew I was getting vertigo because, you know, I often had to walk off stage. And one of them might have to help me walk off stage because I couldn't, like, I literally couldn't walk off stage. Or I might have to use my bass as a walking cane. It's a good, handy walking cane. It's much better than violin. But
very attractive.
Yes, very attractive, very expensive walking cane. And then about 3 or so years ago, I started to get the same symptoms in my right ear. And I was so upset about that because it's not necessarily the case that you will get it in both ears. And it's also not necessarily the case that you will go deaf. It's just, it's one of the possible outcomes. And about a year ago, actually, it was right after we finished the Christmas Pops in 2016. About a day or two later, I got very sick, and I wound up having multiple vertigo attacks for about 6 weeks straight. I couldn't leave the house, and my hearing just plummeted all the way down to deaf. And it really didn't recover. I had a couple bizarre days where it recovered completely, and then it would go away again. And that's unfortunately what happens with Meniere's disease. It's incredibly frustrating that you don't ever know where you're going to stand from one day to the next. But also, the little added bonus in my pack is that I've now got pitch distortion. So above a certain pitch, it jumps up and is not the right note anymore. So playing with other people has become really impossible because I hear a cluster of notes all at the same time, and none of them are actually the right notes.
So what can you still hear?
Up around like where you're speaking, I can hear, without a hearing aid, I would hear you like you were at the end of a hallway. So I have a hearing aid in, and so that's boosting your sound a lot. And then we also have kind of tweaked the sounds from around that to push them into that frequency area, which is what a lot of people who wear hearing aids do. You know, your audiologist will say, okay, well, here's where you hear the best. Let's push everything into that area. That also means if I hear music, though, it's all getting squeezed into that area. So it adds to the distortion.
This strikes me as a nightmare. I mean, Beethoven is probably the most famous of all of the musicians who lived through this nightmare. But for you, it feels particularly frustrating because it's so unpredictable.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the hardest part. I didn't just go deaf overnight, which I don't want to game it out and say that would have been easier or harder. I don't really know because I just don't know. But I mean, I have been working with a therapist for the last year, and he would frequently say to me, I think this unpredictability has got to be the hardest thing on you because, you know, in the years leading up to it, some days I would hear fine. Some days I would hear fine, but with distortion. Some days my hearing would drop 50%, 70%. And I would just be like, do I go to concert tonight? Do I call in sick? You know, what do I do about this? And I never, ever knew. You know, my husband and I just have a morning ritual. I wake up and the first thing he says is, I love you. And the next thing I say is, I can hear you or I can't hear you. And that's how we start our day. Because, you know, we realized it was bad for us to assume that I was the same as I was when I went to sleep. And it was better for us just to start each day and know, like, okay, this is where it is today.
Well, if you're going to start a day, those are probably the three best words to start a day with, I guess.
Yes, please.
So what do you do? You had this career that has defined you as one of Rochester's best double bassists. And certainly, as a beloved teacher, your students adore you. What do you do when you have defined yourself, Galen, as this double bass maven teacher?
Yeah, that's been really tricky for the last year. I'm still teaching, actually. This has been a really interesting road. I asked my students, even when I was really, really sick, because I was also exhausted while my brain was adapting to this hearing loss, I asked a couple of my youngest students who were just really short lessons. I said, would you mind if we kept going and just sort of see how it goes as an experiment with the option for you to bail at any time with no hard feelings? And me too, like if we feel like this is not, and sure, they said, okay. And so from week to week, we just kept working and I literally could hear nothing. And it went great. It went fine. They were so flexible with me. I'd use my phone on a voice-to-text, like in a notepad, program, like an app, like a notepad. And so if I could not understand what they were saying, usually I can figure out what you're asking me. What's that note? What's that fingering? But I would still demonstrate for them. And I can see what they're playing. You know, the bass is very visual because it's so large. And so we were able to work around that. And it was like the thing that made me want to get out of bed in the morning was knowing that like today I was going to see this person. And that was only two individual kids a week I was seeing for a while. And then in between, it was just like, try to get better, go to the doctor, go to the naturopath and think about what I might do if I didn't actually get better. Because I didn't know that I was going to stay deaf. We all thought, well, it might change. It's Meniere's disease. It might change. So I've been spending a lot of time thinking about that. But in the meantime, actually, my studio's grown, Julia. I have 17 students right now. And the hearing is helping. You know, it's helping that I can actually hear speech now. But I this has been like the little joke. It's like, okay, so now if you study with me, I cannot bust you on pitch. So, hey, but you're not getting away with anything because I'm going to ask you all the time, like, well, that didn't really seem right. And I feel in my body, actually, I feel pitch and I feel dynamics in my body differently, which is totally interesting to me that I sort of ignored that when I had the use of my ears. And I kind of wish there was a way to communicate that to my students. And sometimes I wonder, like, should I get those airplane things the guys, you know, working out on the tarmac have to protect their ears and like make my students wear them and see if they would feel what I feel, like so we could open up our senses better. Probably unnecessary punishment for the student, but it's been really interesting. So I haven't stopped working as a teacher. And then I also started writing music because one of my adorable students said to me, you know, she's flipping through her book looking for something. I think it was a gavotte. And there's like a million of them in this book. And she keeps stopping at the wrong one. And finally she goes, Miss Galen, why are there so many gavottes and bourrées and sonatas? Like, why is there not something called hot dog? Like, once I finally like recomposed myself, I was like, I don't know. I think we should fix that. And so I started writing silly things with like nachos and root beer float and all these silly title things. And I just started digging into that. And it like opened my brain back up to like, why do I have to stop just because I can't hear? Why do I have to set these limits on myself? Why? I just started asking that question all the time. And I was like, wait a minute, why don't I just stop that? And instead of saying like, I can't hear, therefore I can't play, why don't I just say like, well, what would happen if I can't hear and I want to play? I can't hear and I want to teach. Like, what do I have to do that? And so I'm actually really, really enjoying teaching, and I'm totally loving composing, which is hilarious to me. If you had asked me a year ago, I've been like, I can never compose. I could never do that. The big people do that, not me.
Hey, you're a real old school composer, too. You're like pencil and paper.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
none of that's computer stuff.
I do the computer later, but I think if you sit in front of a computer, my brain just turns off, or I'd want to open Facebook. I wouldn't want to compose.
You know, the body is an amazingly adaptive thing, and you have a history of musicians ahead of you who have had these struggles. You know Beethoven composed while he was deaf. And you know Evelyn Glennie works in bare feet to hear in a new way. So this must be in many ways very exciting to find a doorway opening in your psyche and in your body that's giving you a new set of artistic tools.
Absolutely it is. And technology. I got hooked up with this wonderful woman from RIT recently, who's just recently retired from teaching at the NTID. And she's been like a wonderful mentor to me in terms of talk to these doctors, think about these devices. And she said, boy, you know, if there was ever a time to lose your hearing, it's now. Technology is amazing for deaf people now. I just got a new hearing aid last week, for instance, and it syncs up with my iPhone. And I was planning to have a Skype session with Danny Zeman, you know him, wonderful jazz bass player and teacher, and he's in Switzerland right now. And we were planning to talk about an article he's writing. So I thought, oh, I wonder if I can hook it up to my iPad. So I sync it up with my iPad, no problem. We Skype, it's great. And then I was like, I wonder how the sound quality is. So I went to YouTube. I made a bunch of YouTube videos a while ago, and I've actually never watched them, which I'm kind of embarrassed about. I just edited them and put them up, you know, work. And so I watched one of them, and I was like, oh, I can hear it. Wait a minute. I didn't think I could hear it. I can hear it. And so suddenly I'm like, just a few days ago, I realized this. I'm like, I can finish the YouTube project. That's why I made that little video called Rounding the Corner to 2018, is I had this epiphany. I don't have to stop doing these pedagogy projects now because I can't hear myself play low when I play acoustically. But if I record it and play it back, I can actually hear it because it's going through the microphone. I'm like, wow, technology is amazing.
So tell me about this YouTube series you do.
Well, so I started this, I think in 2012 or 2013, because I teach some of the same books over and over again. And I was thinking, for one of my students was like, I kind of forgot what you said. And I went to look for it on YouTube and I couldn't find anybody but other students playing it. And I thought, oh, well, that's dumb. There should just be a pro or another teacher out there playing it. And so I Googled it because I thought, oh, he just didn't look hard enough. No, there's really nobody else out there. So it's not the whole, like, you need to see me playing it. But if there's no one else doing it, I thought, this is real low threshold. I'll just get into the studio and do it. And it was really fun, you know, just to, like, teach through them, not just play them, but stop and teach through them and really show my personality and show what I think is important about these pieces and my instrument. So it's been a whole lot of fun to put them together. And I just stopped because I ran out of time, you know, to do them the week that I sat down to do them. So I'm like, oh, this will be great to get back to thinking about them again and to working on the bass again.
We believe we are unique. We all want to believe that we're unique. Our stories are unique, but we're not. We're being echoed around the world. Have you heard from other musicians yet who are going through similar things?
Yes. Yes, I have. And you know what's funny is when I started going deaf, I couldn't find another professional musician who had gone deaf. Now, I knew about Evelyn Glennie, but I couldn't find another professional musician who had gone deaf and kept playing. I could only find musicians who had gone deaf and retired. So I was really looking for somebody to mentor me. And this is another reason I made that Facebook post, is my coach said to me, if you put this out, people will find you who need you and you can help them. And so almost immediately I had three or four people come to me and say, I'm losing my hearing now, or I've lost my hearing and I just don't know what to do, or I'm on the edge of this. And I feel so happy that I did this. It was a big leap of faith. I was really, really concerned about the community sort of saying like, well, done with you. I mean, what good are you now? And I kind of look back at that now and think, why would I ever think that? Why would our community do that to me? The music community is so much more generous than that. But anyway, I'm super glad I put it out there. And I'm super happy that these musicians reached out to me, that I can say, you know, this is what I know and this is where I would look, you know, in your community.
And as musicians go, you are incredibly lucky that you live in Rochester, because we have one of the biggest and most active deaf communities in the world.
Absolutely.
And so you have all of these great things at your fingertips that you can take take advantage of. Are you learning ASL?
I am.
How's that going?
So far, so good. It's really fun. My husband and I are learning together. And my daughter's 9, so I teach her a little bit at dinner, and I start with the things like, you know, dessert names that she will want to know. But because she's so young, she picks it up like a sponge. It's amazing.
She'll be teaching you.
Absolutely.
No time at all. You could actually think about tying in to NTID and the deaf community. You, Galen, could start a whole new thing.
Well, at the recommendation of Sally, who I met at NTID, I went and met Thomas Warfield recently, who teaches dance there, who is unbelievable. Oh my God, what a treasure he is. So I'm hoping to learn more from him, and I am hoping to tap more into the community at NTID. I think I have a lot to learn from them, and just to see, well, like I said, I'm still figuring out what my next step is and what my path is, but I'm positive somewhere in this community, I'm going to find my way.
What has all of this taught you? What are you learning about Galen as this long road? Because it's a lifelong journey now.
Well, no kidding. A couple things that I learned right off the bat were, haha, you can't do everything by yourself. Haha, I always thought I could. Yeah, no. I mean, I'm fiercely independent and very, very private. And that just, I had to drop all of that. Because it's just impossible. I needed a ton of help in the last year, and I just had to ask for it. And I just simply couldn't be private about it because it doesn't make any sense. Like, why is she not playing? Why am I walking into a store and not able to hear someone like who needs to get around me in the shopping aisle? You just simply have to be more transparent about everything that's going on. So that was one thing. The other thing is that, you know, you say that, like, this thing has defined me, being a bass player and a bass teacher, but I've realized it doesn't have to really define me anymore. You know, I'm so much more than that, and I'm so many other things.
What are you hoping to give others through all of this?
What am I hoping to give others? Hope, if nothing else. Gosh, hope that, you know, you transcend the disability. The disability is one thing. In fact, I've started saying it's my superpower now, right? It's my superpower. Sure, I'm deaf, whatever. It's my superpower. So I'm just hoping to give people hope. And I'm really grateful that you asked me on here because I hope other people will hear, you know, whatever your thing is, because everyone's got a thing. I mean, you could be 100% healthy in your body, but I'm sure you got a thing that's hanging you up. There's always hope to do whatever it is you want to do. You just have to find your way and say, like, I may have this thing and I want to do X, not but, and I want to do X. And now find the way that those things go together.
Thank you very much, Galen, for coming in and chatting with us.
Oh, thank you, Julia.
We will be exploring the works of other performers and other composers who've overcome challenges to create music that we love throughout the week on WXXI as part of our station-wide initiative, Dialogue on Disability. You can join the dialogue at classical915.org. This podcast is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.